About the encounters with Jesus after the resurrection. We're going to carry on our series of 40 days with Jesus. And I do think, whilst we're continuing our series, I do think today's message is actually quite appropriate for many men in the room. Today's message is about failure and overcoming failure. Now, I don't want to be stereotyping, but I think as men, we really struggle with this, don't we? I think women do as well. But in terms of where our pride goes and how we see ourselves, we don't like to fail. Just as much as we don't like to ask for directions, we don't like to fail at things. And asking for directions feels like a failure sometimes, doesn't it? Women, I don't know why, but you seem to have no problems at all with asking for directions. Is that a fair statement? Yeah? Okay. But for some reason, us guys just have a problem asking for help. And us guys have a problem when we feel like we're down and picking ourselves up again. And we can react in one of two ways, I think, and this will be fair for both men and women. There's a fight or there's a flight, isn't there? And you've all heard about that, fight or flight syndrome. And that really is just a reaction to a problem. So you have a foreseeable problem, you're down on the floor, you either stay laying down on the floor and, cover your head screw yourself up into a ball and go into a fetal position, which is flight, or you stand up and you fight and you make something of yourselves. And men, I think we love to think that we can all fight. We love to think, I think, we're brilliant fighters. The reality is we're not all that brilliant fighters sometimes. And the reality is we just need to ask for help and we just need to accept that we're down on the floor and we need a hand to get up, okay? Now, these things all do apply to women as well. But as a man, I'm speaking from a man's perspective, we hate failure. I personally don't like to fail at things, okay? I hate it. I can look back on my life and see how God has used past failures and past times when I'm down on the floor and really appreciate it and know, yeah, God, you have been in control this whole time. But when I'm in the situation, when I'm on the floor, metaphorically, I hate it. Because it takes some effort to stand up, and sometimes I just want to carry on laying on the floor. That's my reaction often. And I'm a bit like an ostrich sometimes, okay? I'm a bit like an ostrich, because an ostrich buries his head in the sand and just forgets the world is happening around them. And I can react to difficult situations like that, I'll admit that. And that's not the best way to react. It's also not the best way to react. I don't know what the opposite of an ostrich is. Maybe a peacock if we're sticking with bird analogies. Okay, it's just to stand up. Okay. There's loads of animals and insects that do this, but they make themselves huge, make themselves really big. Really, on the inside, they're quite small, but as a reaction to their opponent, they would make themselves look as big as possible, whereas really they're only the size of a peacock. But they display this amazing thing, amazing plumage. So we're either peacock or ostrich. I'll just come up with that one, it's fine. there's lots of, I think, really, really strong and inspiring quotes about overcoming failure and the opposite of overcoming failure, which will be success. Well, the same as overcoming failure, which will be success, okay? Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. Kids may know him from playing the character Maui in the latest film, what's it called? Moana. He plays Maui in that, absolutely fantastic. If you get to see it, it's a really good kids film. So The Rock, Dwayne Johnson is this big guy, and he's been big from his teenage years. I think he originally from New Zealand. And he's a fighter, and he's actually a wrestler, and he's legendary. He's brilliant. And he says the key to success is dedication, 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 and hard work. You just got to put in the hours. You got to get up. He gets up 4 hours before he needs to be anywhere. So if he's on set shooting at 7 a.m., he would get up at 3 a.m., 3 o'clock in the morning, every morning, to do some cardio work, to go for a run, and to do some weights, and to mentally and physically prepare for his day. He's dedicated, and that's the way he lives his life. And some of us guys in the room would love to be like that. Some of us would love to have that sheer just dedication and drive, and that's the way we would love to succeed. Another quote here from, we're going backwards here. One of my favourite films. "The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place. And I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody else is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't all about just how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much can you take and keep moving forward? That's how winning is done." Now, does anybody know where that quote came from?
Rocky.
Yes, Rocky. Which Rocky? Rocky Four. Any advances on four? It's actually from the 2006 film Rocky Balboa. Okay, and he's speaking to his son, and his son is advising him not to go in for this big fight. He's obviously, Rocky's got a history, and he's won lots and lots of fights. My favourite person is Rocky Four, the big Russian guy. I think it's a fantastic film. But he's getting on in years. He should have retired. He had retired a long time ago, and this opportunity for a big fight and stardom again comes up, and his son's like, "What are you doing, Dad? This is ridiculous. You are, potentially you're pushing on 60 years old. What are you doing getting back in the ring?" And he comes back with this quote, and he said, it's not just about how hard you hit, but it's about how you get up after you've been hit. How many times?" And we would love to take these things on as kind of life verses, if you like, and love to, embody them and live them out. But I want to come back today to how Jesus sees that we should overcome failure. And it's slightly contrary to what this macho persona is. And sometimes, us men, we just need to suck that up. So if we read John 21 together. John chapter 21. And we'll go from verses 1 to 22. Okay. "So after Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee, or by the Sea of Tiberias, it happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. 'I'm going out to fish,' Simon Peter told them. And they said, 'We'll go with you.' So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early the next morning, Jesus stood at the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, 'Friends, haven't you any fish?' 'No,' they answered. He said, 'Throw your net onto the right side of the boat and you will find some.' But when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then disciple whom Jesus loved, which we know as John, said to Peter, 'It is the Lord.' As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, 'It is the Lord,' he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, jumped into the water, but the other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. Actually, in my translation, it says about 90 yards. So 90 meters. 90 meters is about 100 yards, which is about the length of a football pitch, or just shy of. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals. There were fish on it, and some bread. Jesus said to them, 'Bring some of the fish you have just caught.' So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. Someone counted, clearly. 153. But with so many in the net, it was not torn. Verse 12, Jesus said to them, 'Come and have breakfast.' None of the disciples dared to ask, 'Who you are?' They knew it was the Lord. So Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them. He did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they'd finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?' 'Yes, Lord,' he said. 'You know I love you.' Jesus said, 'Feed my lambs.' Again, Jesus said, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' He answered, 'Yes, Lord. You know that I love you.' Jesus said, 'Take care of my sheep.' The third time he said to him, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, 'Do you love me?' He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and when you and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you to where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. And we'll end there. So this is quite a big passage, and there's lots to say, and I think it's two parts really, so I'm only going to pick one of the two parts to focus on today, just for time constraints. The first part is verse 1 to 14, which is about the story of breakfast and the story of this big catch of 153 on Lake Galilee. And there's some interesting points to be made there, but I'm not going to dwell on those too much. But I think it's interesting that Jesus came and met them whilst they were going about their daily business, their daily job. Jesus there stepped in. Fishing was their pastime. And going out at night to catch fish would have been a wise thing to do because they would have been fresh for the market the next morning. So this was a fairly normal, mundane situation that Jesus found them in, except they didn't have any fish. So Jesus stepped in, the miracle happened, 153 fish turned up. And then later on, they come to the shore. Interestingly, Simon is the first to jump out of the boat into the water. He's tenacious, he's enthusiastic, he's always the first. He was the first and the only one to step out of the boat when Jesus was walking on water. He's bold. So it's no surprise to us at all that he was the only one to jump out into the water to go to shore, whilst the rest, I got pictures of him just leaving the rest to sort the fish out and bring the boat home. So it's maybe a little bit selfish. But verse 15 to 19 is what I really want to focus on. And it's entitled in my Bible, Jesus Reinstates Peter. Jesus Reinstates Peter. And you all know the story of Peter's failure. In fact, his failure is probably more well-known than his successes. And his biggest failure, as far as we can see it, is that he denied Jesus. Not once, not twice, but three times he denied him. And Jesus foresaw this. He knew it was going to happen. He said, before the cock crows, you will deny me three times. And we know that Peter's initial reaction was weeping and sorrow. He was gutted. And I know when we fail, when I fail, I'm gutted. Especially something I could have succeeded at. So I fail and I'm gutted. And that's a normal, natural reaction. And there isn't much said about Jesus' response to it between that point and this. In fact, Jesus has only one one-to-one encounter with Peter before this time. And it's it's a little talked about encounter, but in the Gospel of Luke, it says that Jesus appeared to Peter personally. It doesn't say what was said, it doesn't say how they met, but Jesus appeared to Peter. So Jesus has appeared to Peter once before this time. And I don't know whether Jesus sat down with him, counseled him, and they went over the past troubles and his past denial. I don't know whether he did that. It's not talked about at all. But maybe I like to assume that. But the next encounter with Peter on a one-to-one level is this, and he says, "Do you love me?" And this is the verse, this is the part of a verse I just want to focus on today. And it's interesting, he says it three times. And I think we can make lots of those three times, but I think one of the most obvious things is that he's reversing the effect of his denial. Peter denied Jesus three times. Jesus asked Peter, "Do you love me?" three times. I think there's some significance in Jesus asking that question as many times as he did. He says, "Do you love me?" And then he says, "Feed my lambs." So there's three things I want to draw out of this one small statement, okay? And the first one is one of the points I had last time, actually. So it's personal, it's about one thing, and it's about one person, okay? I'm sorry they don't all start with P or A, okay? But there's 3 points, okay? Do you love me? This statement is personal, it's about one thing, it's about one person, okay? That's the 3 points I want to cover today. And we'll try and do that in the next 5-10 minutes. Okay, firstly, it was personal. Do you love me? That's what he says to Peter. Do you love me? Now, Jesus has chosen to take Peter to one side. They've had their breakfast as the 11 disciples. They sat around the coal fire early in the morning. And I imagine Jesus sat next to Peter, putting an arm around him maybe, and saying, let's have a chat. Maybe they stand up and they go and walk somewhere. Maybe they just quietly talk to one side. But he says to Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Now, last time I was up here, I was focusing on the personal statement, the fact that Jesus calls us by name. He calls us by name. And I would say the same today, that he calls us by name. But he challenges us and he asks us the question, do you love me? Dale, do you love me? If nobody else was in the room, imagine nobody else was here today. Jesus was asking you this question directly to yourself, face to face, at eye level. Do you love me? Doesn't matter if the person next to you can answer that question. It doesn't matter whether you're in a church full of people who love Jesus. He comes to you and says, do you love me? It's about you now. This is a conversation between Jesus and yourself. And sometimes we need to take a step back and ask what our own personal relationship is with Jesus. Sometimes we need to take a step back and look at our motivation for coming to church, etc., and ask, do I personally, me, Dale Anthony Carmichael, do I have a personal relationship with a living God? Do I love him? Jesus said to Peter, do you love me? Not worried about anybody else on the seashore that day, but do you? That's the question I'm asking you. It's then about one thing. I'm not going to make more of a point of this. Do you love me? Okay, so what's the action here? It's love. Do you love me? I'm talking to you directly. Do you love me? Not like me, not put up with me, not obey me, but love me. Do you know me? But do you love me? Now, love comes in a number of different ways. And I don't know if any of you have read the book on the 5 love languages. Emma and I did it quite early on in our relationship, and we found that we're a completely opposite end of the spectrum. but these 5 love languages, this author puts, are words of affirmation, gifts, acts of service, physical touch, and quality time. And just for your information, Emma's top one is words of affirmation, and my top one is acts of service, okay? But they all relate to the same thing. They all relate to this one four-letter word, love. And it's how we express and also how we receive love. And love, what I think they're trying to say in these different elements of love, is that love is a fairly holistic thing. It's fairly rounded. It's not just an emotional experience, if you like, or it's not just a kind act of service. It's much more than that. It's all of these things, and I think the author tries to summarize love in these 5 terms. So it's words of affirmation, gifts, acts of service, physical touch, and quality time. In the book of Deuteronomy. Chapter 6, verse 4, it says this. It says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments I give to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them to your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and your gates. And you can actually divide this verse up a little bit, not to be too mundane about it, but into those love languages. Okay, love the Lord your God with all your heart. Okay, that's an emotional thing. That's an inner thing with all your soul and all your strength. These commandments I give to you today to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Okay, so give them to your children as a gift. Talk about them when you sit at home. Okay, so that's words of affirmation. Talk about them. And when you walk along the road, when you lie down and get up, tie them as symbols. So that's physical touch. And put them on your foreheads. Okay? So love is this big holistic thing. It's a broader word than we give it credit for. It's not just emotion, but it's not just acts as well. It's bigger than this. Do you love me? And the third point, it's about one person. It's about Jesus. Do you love me? We all love different things in life. Emma's not shy of telling about her love for cake and chocolate. We all love things, don't we? We all really like things, but sometimes those things go more than just liking, they go love. And we end up having a relationship with these things. I'm not saying Emma's got a relationship. Well, she has got a relationship with cake. It's not. It's slightly unhealthy, but it's not idolatry at the moment. But do you love me, he says, okay? So I think he accepts the fact that we can love other people and love other things. But he's asking a very simple question. Jesus says, do you love me? Do you love me? What does this look like? John 14:15 says, if you love me, you keep my commands. This is how we act out our love for this one person. Whoever has my commands and keeps them is the one who loves me. The one who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love them and show myself to them. Verse 23 says, Jesus replied, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come and make a home with them. You heard me say, I'm going and I'm coming back to you. If you love me, you would be glad that I'm going to my Father, for the Father is greater than I. It really boils down to one thing about one person. Do you love Jesus? Do you personally love him? And remember, we're talking about love in this holistic way. If you love me, you will obey my commands. It really is about one person. I know we make it about other things often, and those other things can crowd that one person. But as a church and as Christians, our lives are only ever about one person. Our songs and our worship are only directed ever at one person. Do you love me? He says. He's selfish. He wants you all to himself. And do you know what? To him, you're the only person that matters. He's that specific. He comes to you and says, do you? He sits by you and says, do you love me? I'm not worried about anybody else in the room at the moment. Do you love me? And when I say, do you love me? Do you really love me? Not just like me, not just obey me, not just put up with me, but do you love me? And do you really love me. The one who died on the cross for all your sins. The one who went above and beyond. The one who encapsulates perfect love, which casts out all fear. And he's asking that question, I believe, to us today. Corporately, but personally, do you love me? Tabby Keller, who is a psychologist born in the 1940s, said we've got five drivers in life. There's five things that motivate us often. And a bit like the five love languages, they sort of summarized what drives us, what motivates us. And they're this: be perfect, be strong, hurry up, please others, and try hard. Those are the things that we, I think, battle with every day. And it may not be all of them, but it may be one that we really struggle with. I don't know if you're sat here and you struggle with perfectionism. And the thing that you love most is just to be absolutely right on the dot every time. I don't know whether you're sat here and you just love to be strong. Not necessarily physically strong, but maybe emotionally strong. Maybe you don't like to show emotions. Maybe you're quite proud of the fact that you can just be a solid rock, and every time you're a solid rock, and you must be strong. You mustn't be weak. And I don't know who said that to you, but it's okay to be weak. Maybe you always like to be first, the winner of every race, first into the office every day. First person to the food counter. Maybe your motivation in life is to be a winner and to be first and to always hurry up. And I think that boils down to time. If time is your biggest constraint, is your biggest love, if you love time more than anything in the world, I would say Jesus would challenge you again today. Maybe your motivation is to please others. Maybe you just love the affirmation that you get when, maybe you just love giving others affirmation, but getting it back as well. Maybe you're all about other people and never about yourself. I think Jesus would challenge that and say, actually, you're as important as the other people sat next to you. Or maybe you just like to try hard. Maybe you like the Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Always being solid, always being the best, the best, the best. And I don't know what you're struggling with today. I've got my own things, Emma's got her own things, we've all got our own things. And there's always, I think, something we just default to. But Jesus just says to us very simply, these few words, do you love me? It's as simple as that. It's all about our love for God. That's the thing that should motivate us. That's the thing that should get us up in the morning. And you know what? When we come back to the start, when we're down, when we're knocked down, when we're down on the floor, that's the thing that gets us up again. It's not our determination to be the best, because sometimes we just have to accept we're not the best. But it's our love for God. It's our motivation for him and him alone. And I don't know what that statement means to you today. Do you love me? Maybe there's one thing particularly that stood out for you today. But I just want to take a brief moment just to have some quiet and just to ask God what that means for you. Because I think he's here and he's asking each and every one of us, do you love me?